We ready?
Yeah.
What are we talking about? We can just kind of tell about our week.
Yeah.
Another week with no elk.
Yeah.
But we've seen a ton.
Yeah.
Probably more than anybody that was out hunting this week.
Yeah. What? 100? Close to it.
100 elk?
Probably.
Well, yeah, probably more than that.
Yeah.
Cody, how many did you see?
No, we seen 6 while hunting.
Oh, yeah, because you were close to that one. Okay. So we'll tell that story, too.
All right, we're here. We just finished up our first week of rifle season, and we got long-time friend, hunted with us a few times now, has been on the podcast, Michael Davis.
I'm back.
He's here, the legend. And then Cody.
Yep.
And then my lovely wife. So, Cody, how was your week?
It was a week.
It was a week.
Didn't do much hunting, but...
Did you earn your stripes as a guide?
I guess.
You think?
I don't know.
Yeah, that was hell week.
Yeah.
There's nothing probably harder than wanting to hunt, doing all the work through the preseason and everything, and then not getting to.
Well, let's set it up. The whole week wasn't, the weather wasn't very, very good.
Yeah. This was a week that you had to have a lot of mental fortitude to get yourself out of bed and go out in the elements to hunt.
Yeah.
So, and unfortunately, at some point, almost half of the camp did sit out one day or up to 5 days.
Well, I can tell you, I wanted to sit out a bunch of days. Honestly, even when you got up in the morning and went out, and when it's pouring down rain on the truck, you don't really want to go stomp the brush down or hike back through there. And especially you can't see anyways because there was so much fog.
Yeah. You shouldn't have put a metal roof on this place too.
I know.
Because you wake up and can hear it.
Yep.
Yeah, especially up in the guide room. You can hear it real good.
Just morale dives off instantly. Everybody's cussing, grumbling.
Yep.
Low murders of the F word going on up there. Yeah.
Hey, you can't kill them on the couch, bub.
Nope.
I mean, I think I made it into the prone position with the safety off 3 times. So...
We were on a legal bull every day but one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sometimes multiple legal bulls. We would hike into far off glassing spots where we could see a lot of country because it was so slick. And Michael's a big guy. I mean, so we ain't going. I mean, he's a big fella. He told me, what'd you say? Just imagine you having 2 hindquarters on your back, and wherever you can go with that, that's where we're...
Yeah. You wake up and put them on your back.
Yeah.
So, I'm probably 350 with my boots and gun on my back.
And dude did 15.6 miles hunting, and we were in the snow most of that day.
In one day. That's in one day.
Not all week.
Yeah.
Did you get 15 miles in all week, Cody?
No.
Yeah, there you
go. Including hunting with Wade, maybe.
No. If you count walking down the porch, that's almost 20 yards long down there. You count that up.
Maybe then. Got pretty close.
All right, so let's just start with the bad. And we're not going to say anybody's names or anything, but we do want clients to be aware of what to really expect out here so that you're not just wasting your money on a hunt that is not going to suit you. So, Cody, go into how your week went.
All right, so, Sunday we got paired up. Everything seemed like it was going to be real good. Morale was high, talking about working hard, sticking it out, and just... hunting all week and doing what he could do, which is all you really can ask for. It's just 100% effort. Monday comes around. I mean, the glass knob wasn't too far away, just down a logging road, sitting glass, just pretty much all day. We didn't do too much hiking. Seen a nice muley buck, seen some elk, and just no opportunities, really. Nothing to really get excited about and start moving around. And then on the way out, gotta come off this little, point, kind of. It's pretty steep. He took a pretty good fall, and I think that's what kind of started the whole downhill slope of everything.
Did you laugh?
I didn't because he fell.
Oh, it was hard. It was a hard one.
Oh, he was rolling.
Oh.
I was trying to stop him from rolling.
Jeez.
All the way. Yeah, his gun did a bunch of flips down the hill. So.
Probably why it didn't shoot later.
Yeah. Probably. And then the next day, we go back in the same spot to see if that buck was running does any closer to us. We heard bulls bugle a couple times throughout the day. They were still pushing cows around, and get out of the truck, and we start walking in the dark, and I'm not going to pay attention to what gun he has. You know, figured you'd have the same gun. Like, no, it's fine. Like, okay. It was rainy and foggy anyway. So, gets out of the truck, he has a different gun. What gun is that? And it's just a whole different situation. So it's
a gun that we didn't get to shoot at the range.
Yeah.
And we are very adamant about watching clients shoot. We want to know that the guns are on. We care about the elk more than your ego and shooting in the range in front of us. Some people don't like it, but we have to pay attention. If you can't hold a group at 100 yards, we're not going to put you on. It determines on where we're going to take you hunting. If you can't shoot very far, it's pointless for a guide to drag you back in a spot where there's 500-yard shots when you can only shoot 200 yards max. Just to lay out the situation why we like to see guns shot. I mean, and ethically, it's you're crazy. I mean, look at Mikey's looking at me like, what kind of knucklehead would go shoot at an animal without shooting the gun?
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't planning on doing anything over 100 yards anyway in that fog and the timber and stuff. So I was like, all right, it'll be all right. And then get in, bull's bugling. So
you're fired up.
Yeah, I'm like,
as a guide,
like, there's a bull bugling rifle season. This is like
chip shot.
Yeah, this is gonna happen.
Yeah.
And we watched these cows come into the four cows and a spike come into this, drop down into the bottom, and then the bull just kind of trickles down with him. And he gets down there, bugles. I'm like, all right, it's good, because the wind's blowing from out the canyon. So we drop down and get in on them. Wind's perfect in our face, and we kind of got to make it happen before the thermals change or we're screwed. Yep. So I was kind of favoring the one side of the hill so we can make a quick movement once the thermals try to change. I heard sticks breaking, and then I hear a bull bugle. I'm like, there's a bull right here. And he didn't, his hearing wasn't very good, and he never heard the bull bugle. It's like, there's a bull bugle. And then I get him set up. I just kind of pull back just in case, like, just, you know, break up my silhouette a little bit, getting some thicker stuff in case I have to kind of throw a stick at him and direct him so we don't both have to move. And I see bits and pieces of this elk coming through the woods. He's just standing there. I'm like, man, I wish I was standing next to him. And he's just standing there, and the elk's just bits and pieces coming through. He couldn't have shot it. Nobody could have shot at it. And then it's like, we got to move. So we come over a little bit, try to kind of cut him off. I have no idea where they're going. He's just kind of pushing cows around, so I was just trying to follow him, but keep my wind good and keep it to where we can make a quick move if we're in there for a while. And he just starts having a coughing fit like no else, and he doesn't try to suppress it at all. He's just hacking and coughing and this and that, and then that was it for the elk. So we pulled out of there and went to another spot, and we're on this gated road, and it's not steep. It's a slight incline the whole way up. And he starts falling behind a little bit, so I stop, take a break, and I'm like, there's elk tracks. Let's just keep going. We'll probably get into them. Like, fresh elk tracks. And he just sits down and goes, I'm done. Let's go. I'm like, what? He's like, I'm not hunting anymore. I hate this. It's like, what? We're in the elk sign. I was like, let's just go another quarter mile. He's like, I don't want to. I said, listen, let's just go a quarter mile. He's like, all right. So get up. It's not really where I wanted to go, but we're watching this little clear cut, and we're sitting there, and he's sitting, and he stands up, and he goes 10 foot, and he sits back down and stands back. I'm like, oh, boy.
He's getting restless.
Yep, and then he comes over to me, and I can tell he's got something wrong with him. Like, he's not happy. He just, with that pace and the look on his face, I was like, oh boy, he's not happy. He goes, get up, let's go. I was like, whoa. He's like, we're going back to the truck. I was like, are you serious? It's almost, I got an hour left. He's like, I want to go. Like, all right. So we sneak down the road and back to the truck. And then he doesn't hunt third day. Go back out the fourth day. Go to the range first. Try to see what his nice gun, how it shoots.
Well, let's go back. I think he listens to this podcast, but it's really good for other clients to know, like, you know, he had an attitude with you. So let's go over that.
He told me, why couldn't they have put me with a guy that's, like, not in shape or doesn't like to hike or anything? Just, like, why would they put an older guy with the youngest guy?
Because those guys can't work here.
Exactly.
This is the truth.
I was like, there's no one here that doesn't want to hike or can't hike, or just, there's no one here that does that. Like, it's just how it got set up.
Yeah. Now, I had a couple phone conversations with this guy. He did his research on us online and stuff. So he was saying all the right things where he wanted to hike and he didn't want to give up and he just wanted the experience. So anything you say, you know, you're not being truthful or completely honest. I just go off of that whenever I pair people up. It's not what age you are, you know, how out of shape you look, because it's just the mental fortitude. But every guide here, we sell a public land fair chase experience. There's nothing easy about these hunts, and that's the way that we sell it. We're very fortunate that we found 7 or 8 like-minded guides that want to hunt that way. So we do take pride in that kind of hunt that we sell. Anyway, along with pairing up, there isn't a guide that works here that is any less than another guide. They all just hunt a little bit different. The attitude of the guides, they all vary. Not any part of it would be, this guide is getting paired with this client because this guide is lazy. That's never even one of those things that cross our minds. It's just
that client might cock an attitude, that guide has a short fuse. We want to watch that we don't pair them up. You know what I mean? That's how it kind of goes.
Yes.
You want to make friends at the end of the week and not people that are ready to choke each other.
Yeah, we try and get like the attitudes matched up with each other. You know, any guy, any client that comes out here that shows any crazy interest in gear and can talk about gear for sun up to sundown, I'm probably going to pair them with Seth because he can also talk about gear from sunup to sundown. And those kinds of things are what we look for when we're pairing guides to clients. It's never, ever, well, this guide is lazy or this guide can't hike, so we're going to pair the oldest client to him. That's just not how it is, because we have some guys that come out here that are the oldest client in camp and they stick it out and put in the hard work. So anyway, what was your response to him?
Well, the main mishap was I took him to this spot where I know there's sometimes some elk and there's a ton of whitetail, and I did see a pretty nice buck in there in archery season. So I was like, okay, we'll try to just ease in here and just slip around in the woods and try to find one of these whitetail. And I mean, the brush is never quiet, but there's ways you can like make yourself more quiet. He was brushing up against all the man's knee that's real loud when it hits your pants and gaiters. It's like just trying to like direct him. Like, can't like let your pant legs scrape against that, and it's just gonna like every time these deer have heard that, they always smell or see or hear people. So there's an unnatural noise. And then just like breaking sticks, like you gotta watch where you walk, breaking sticks and all this. And like I was just like real calm and like collected and telling him, like just like trying to like baby him through it, and he just wouldn't stop. He did it. I was like, watch this. We stepped over this blowdown, there's a stick. I was like, watch this stick. Whoom! Cracked it, and then you just see tails going down the hill. I was like, gotta watch where you're walking. And he didn't like that very much. And then we walk another half mile down this ridge, cross this ridge, and I know I found some bedding in there in archer season, and there's some fresh deer tracks going into it. And I was just side-hilling a little bit on this deer trail, and he falls, and these deer take off. So I just sat down, and then they started blowing. He's like, why are they blowing? I said, they heard you fall. And that's when it was like a switch flipped. He just got super just not happy. And then it was just unpleasant the whole time, and it made me unpleasant. I was getting frustrated because, I mean, I was trying to sneak through the woods, and he was just stomping. I was like, do you want to kill a deer? And he was just like, nah, I don't know. And then I was just like, all right. So we just hiked out.
It blows my mind that people think that these noises don't scare elk. I've referred to it all week. We snuck out on a glassing knob. Before we were to the glassing knob, and we snuck down to it, we rolled a couple rocks. So I know whoever was there before us at that spot, or, you know, they had them elk pretty well boogered up, because a cow barked at us the second one rock moved over there. So that's, I was crazy. Like, we're not going back to this spot. Someone's done been, they have them queued up over here. They must be like lighting off fireworks and doing aerobics over there on that glassy knob.
And they didn't run off.
No.
But this, we wasn't there 5 minutes and every one of them.
They paid attention to us instantly. They were queued up on that. So if you're coughing and stuff in the middle of a, like, less than 200 yards, it's not good. It's over.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's way over. You, if you're within a certain distance of elk and you're not like being like a dang cat, those elk are already within 5 minutes. They're like, something is over there for 100%. And you can watch their reactions through binoculars. I mean, the second a twig, boom, the cows are staring down that thing like crazy.
Well, you referenced it. You know, when Jimmy killed his bull, we sat over there for 4 hours and watched the packers coming with headlamps at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And you could hear them talking.
You could hear, like, the headlamps coming out of the backpacks. You could hear the backpacks rustling around. People just...
Truck doors.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
All that stuff.
Everything. That adds up. I think that's the difference. That's why we come up with so many bulls daily, is because we'd stay away from them and glass into there like crazy people, just picking stuff apart and then make moves in on the elk, or let them alone. I mean, we wouldn't fool with them at all, try to do anything unless they get in a high percentage place of a kill.
Yeah.
And when you're down in the woods with them he essentially has a youth hunting ability. I mean, it would be like taking a 13-year-old kid hunting. He never hunted before, ever, right?
He hunted a few times when he was young, like real young, like a kid.
Okay.
And then he just got out of it. His buddies had, like he said, his buddy said there was an opening, and he just jumped in pretty kind of last minute with it, just kind of out of the blue, just, yeah, I'll go.
Yeah, see, I'd have loved to have talked to him about that, because I'm curious of what, like, made him want to develop a passion to come back into hunting, you know, such late into life.
Well, he just said it was just a game time decision on whether, because he always wanted to, like, see out west, and he wasn't really ever planning on hunting again. And his buddies just asked him to go hunting, and he was like, yeah, I'll go.
So he got to come see the west and got demoralized and punished for a week. Yeah, I wonder how many, you asked about that, like, you asked how many times buddies pressure other guys into coming hunting, and that's maybe a lot of what the unpreparedness we get.
With
a few clients, you know what I mean, because they want help out on gas, you know what I mean, it helps, and you think it's going to be a great experience, but if they're not fully mentally prepared to hunt this country and have all the gear and things, when they get here, it's miserable for them, and they kind of got pressured into it, so they get upset. I think that does happen some. Yeah. It would have to, I mean.
Yeah.
I know that we might seem a little bit rude putting all this out here, but we just really... We want to see clients come out, and we want to see them repeatedly come out. You know, if you're a new hunter, then that's fine. Just, you know, you have to listen to the guide. We don't just hire anybody here, and they do know what they're talking about. So even if you're getting frustrated, just know they're sitting out in the rain, in the fog, and everything for you to have an opportunity.
So yeah, it's hard to sell, because we even say all these things on a podcast, and then we get people to get mad at us when we hunt hard. It's very frustrating. I think social media is the worst daggum thing that there ever was invented ever.
Yeah, because I mean, you only see the good parts of it, like the guy laying on the gun, shooting the elk, and then they get to the elk, and then they're back to the truck. Yeah. They don't show the hunting they did to find that elk.
And 5 days before that, steam rolling off of you, soaking wet, freezing to death on glass and knobs, sitting it out to the last till you can't see through binoculars. Even though shooting lights done way gone, you can't shoot through your scope because you can't see. You're wanting to find a bull that comes out so you might have a play for tomorrow. It's a lot of work. A lot of guys aren't even worthy to kill an elk, and they're not even worthy to be hunting them. They are a very worthy adversary for a hardcore hunting dude. That's why you see all these alcoholics and all these guys. I mean, those are probably some hardcore dudes that love misery. They love to suffer, and those are elk hunters. You got to kind of like it, and you can separate yourself with just having mental fortitude in this type of hunting, and that's what we preach. I feel like just a broken record repeating the same thing over and over and over and over again on here.
Yeah, you'll mentally break before you physically, probably.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're a human.
Well, I don't have social media. But you can get online or get on your website, whatever, and look at pictures and photos and videos and go to the sports show. I don't even know where you met these people. Did they come to the sports show?
Some of them did. He was thrown in as a last minute a person of their group. So we met half of the group, but we did not meet him face to face.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So even that, you know, the other guys, I don't know what their hunting experience has been or was, but you go to a sports show or you look at social media, you watch videos, you get yourself hyped up, and it's like, man, this is the beautiful, you know, prettiest place in the world. I'm going to go kill one of these elk, mule deer, walk to the top of that mountain, and then you get here. It is prettiest place in the world. It is. But it's tough.
There is elk hunts that you can ride around in a truck on private land ranch. They probably got a Jeep. They'll pile you in. You can go in glass and get out of it and shoot. Go gather your elk up in a tractor. That is for 100% not what we are trying to do. We're not trying to sell that. I wouldn't want any parts of a hunt like that. We're for the everyday guy that just would come out and do a DIY hunt. Here he can spend the money. We're doing the scouting. We give him a place to stay. We're being his hunting buddy, period. We want a hardcore hunting dude, and we're going to be their hunting buddy that they can come and get after it with us.
I mean, I have friends that's come out here before you all had this establishment. I mean, you were working for previous owner. You know, they've been out here 10, 15 years ago. Multiple guys I know that come out here and, you know, try to do it themselves. And they've seen elk, but to show up in Trout Creek and say, okay, I'm going to go hunt this drainage, or I'm going to go hunt this canyon. I'm going to go whatever. You could literally spend a week hiking and not see anything with no local knowledge. And I mean, basically that's what you're providing, the local knowledge, you know, and guidance to an extent. You're not putting an animal in front of them at 100 yards, you know, in a nice warm vehicle or a box blind.
That's hard to do.
Yeah.
I mean, there's everybody else that's hunting is wanting that same exact experience, though. They're trying to ride around in their mobile ground blind, and
yeah,
they're picking all that easy-hanging fruit off the tree instantly. So that's one thing as a guide. We've taken a lot of people in most of these same hikes, you know what I mean? So, and then over the years, you hear experience from, I've taken people, and then we have older guys. I mean, Speed's 80-plus years over. 80 plus years, he was over eating supper, and he's telling us about taking clients into these crazy spots that you were looking to me like, dude, we can't even take the most in shape archery guys into that. So it's just changed completely. And the technology with the long range and all the stuff, then everybody's just powering up. You know what I mean? Not in a whole lot of hiking. As soon as we start hiking, you start finding lots of game. When you're hiking, you get back in, hike to a glassing knob that's hard to get to. There's animals everywhere. When we're saying this, we don't care if you can't like hike into the complete backcountry and do all this. We just like, it's so fun to hunt with someone that has a good attitude, and a good attitude kills animals. If you're having a good time, like we laughed. I mean, even on the worst days, we would laugh so hard that my cheeks hurt.
Yeah.
And we just kept good attitude the whole entire time. And that kills animals. And it's easy to be around that type of person. Just like Jay had a great time. I mean, I didn't get to talk to those guys very much. I missed going to the range and stuff with everybody, but they seemed very nice.
They told their guide exactly what they were capable of, and then Jay just kind of adjusted it to what they could do, and they had a good time, had no complaints, and were just out here for the experience and the memories together. So whenever we see that, that's perfect. If you come out, we want everyone to know what to expect. And as long as you're completely honest with us and the guide, then everyone can kind of adjust for the week so that you can maximize the experience that you have.
Yeah, I mean, we sat around shivering so hard we couldn't look through binoculars, but
we
laughed the whole entire time.
Oh, yeah, our one buddy had purple lips, and he looked like he's honestly about to die of hypothermia. And I was freezing cold, too, but I got to laughing so hard I heated back up.
Yeah, so then let's go on to the whole different side of the spectrum.
Enough of the
and,
down.
Yeah, let's go over Mikey's hunt, who you've been out here how many times now? Four?
Three.
Three. No, this is your...
Yeah, mountain lion hunting once.
Mm-mm. No, this is four.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. No, I've been out here like five or six.
Yeah. but just
with dogs. Yep. But yeah, no, this is four.
Jeez, I suck. I'm sorry.
Sorry. I think I stink. I smell funny.
I don't know. We always see so much game. Like, I know. And then we get so close. We were within 60 yards, 60 to 75 yards of a whole group of elk on the
day
first
one.
Day one, 6-point bull in there. Yep. Pouring down rain, running off of your face. And
watch the clock as the legal shooting time passed.
Yeah, just couldn't do nothing. We couldn't get any closer. We could only see out of those group elk, we could see five of them. We knew that bull was right there handy, but we could not move around to see him. We were just pinned down.
Yep.
Sat there and watched elk.
Yep.
Really close.
Oh, yeah.
Which was fun. It got me fired up. I was like...
Me too. Day one.
Yeah, it's like, oh, rifle season. This is going to be fun. Yep. Yeah, Monday we went to... Yeah, we went to a good spot. While we were on those elk, one of the funniest things... So we're on these elk. We're in the woods with these elk on the side of the mountain, and people are driving up the mountain below us, and they're stopping half a mile from these elk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're glassing these things at 500 yards and 12 vehicles within 45 minutes. Pull up, stop, glass the other side of the ridge, and then leave. Yeah. And every time the vehicles would leave, you could hear the elk start to move in the woods.
Yep.
As soon as a vehicle would pull up, they would stop. I mean, they were literally turning around within 200 yards of them.
Yep.
No clue they existed.
Nope. It was so much fun sitting there watching all that.
Yep.
And so then we get into that shooting knob, and we didn't mess around in the morning trying to glass anything like that. We just bombed to a place where we could get a shot off, because I was pretty confident that elk were going to be going through there. Especially with us up on that bank, if we didn't booger them around in the rain, which we evidently, they stayed right tight.
Yeah.
We didn't see doodly squat. Wind kicked up.
A lot of
up,
wind.
Wind kicked up, hateful. We moved around a few times, like, just to survive freezing to death.
Yeah, yeah. Got into some mule deer.
Yep, we did get into some mule deer.
One buck.
Yeah.
It got away from us.
Yeah, I got a little... Big buck. I don't know if it was a big buck or not. I just got all excited. It was probably a dink, probably a fork horn. But it got us all excited. We was in the hunt for a little bit.
Yeah.
Then the third day, we went to a spot, and then we went to another spot, and then that's when we killed the buck.
Mm-hmm.
Killed a pretty nice mule deer buck. Glassed him up. Mikey glassed him up. He goes, hey, Jackson, how big's that mule deer buck? I was like, that's a shooter. We're shooting that buck. And then you couldn't decide for a little bit whether you wanted to kill that buck or not.
Well, we had to look through glass, right?
Yeah, you got to make it, give him a chance.
You get a little
wound up.
Yeah, you get a little horn happy sometimes. So
sometimes I do.
Had to call your bluff.
I did. It was a nice buck, though.
Not that I don't trust you. But, you know, you even made the comment you were a little nervous.
Oh, yeah, I was.
Walking over to it.
I was. This buck didn't give us a lot of time, and when they're going away from you quartering, they sometimes can look a lot wider than what they are. I seen he had forks, so I knew that, but he didn't look like he had a ton of mass or anything like that. And we didn't want to get over there and have an 18-inch deer laying on the ground. You'd have been mad at me.
No, I wouldn't have been mad.
Would have been mad, but... And then I was getting fresh. I was like, we got about 3 seconds in that thing's, or 3 minutes in that thing's going to be out of our lives forever.
Yeah.
And then you dumped him.
Yeah, I think went from unloaded gun to dead deer in like maybe 10 seconds.
Yep.
It happened pretty quick, so.
Blowed her buddy's eardrums out.
Yeah, yeah.
A knucklehead. I seen that. I've been around that gun. Let's go. What is that cannon? Yeah.
A 30-378, so.
Yeah, flat shooting.
The largest, flattest, fastest factory 30 caliber.
And I watched through a pair of 16 power binoculars the vapor trail just pound this buck off his feet. Just,
yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Actually the first thing that gun's killed.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
I did a good job.
Yeah. Yep.
Wasn't a bad pack out. Steep.
Oh, yeah. It was steep.
It was steep.
Yeah.
But we were gonna go at a direct line to the deer and not do this big move around. And I kept saying, I was like, I've seen it be a pain in the butt and find them. It was only 500 yards.
Yeah.
And so we did struggle just a little bit finding the deer, but we found him pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
I cut his track. I actually found where he got out of his bed and walked up the hill with the doe. And then I just followed those tracks right up to where the gun went off. We had to do a follow up.
Yep.
And it was over. Picture taken and hand shaken. I was excited. I thought for sure, we got excited because there was elk in there too. So we were like, let's double up off this rock.
Yeah, yeah, I like that rock.
We went to picking that place apart, but couldn't pull up a bull in there. Then we found the place that just demoralizes you constantly, always. And there's elk.
Yeah.
Suckers you there all the time.
It's a spot where Josh said right before rifle season that he was never going in there this year. He was finding other spots. We all just laughed at him. We knew he'd be there all week.
Yeah, it sucked with me twice already this year.
We'll be 80 and still going in there.
I know. I like some of them death hikes around there. Just test you out. But we made it. We saw a nice bull. And we made a game plan to go around our elbow to get to our butthole. Literally, that's a great analogy. Edit that out.
Well, the first time we seen it, we made a move.
Oh, yeah. I forgot all about that. Tried to make a move. I said, I have no idea. There's one spot where you can see in there, but I don't think we're going to be able to see where that bull was at. And they were traveling too. So we were only going off a hope and a prayer that they bedded up. But it was a bull of enough caliber that it was worth making a move. And you could go stand over there in the timber and try to find a shooting spot through. And that's what we did. Yeah, we went. We got within range of where we figured they held up. And then we just broke up and down this knob trying to glass like crazy, trying to find him, piece it in there, and spent a couple hours trying to do that. Didn't come up with anything. We couldn't work any closer because we didn't want to bump him out of there. There was no way to really access the good shooting spot without moving those elk. And we didn't know if they might have already went through that canyon.
Yeah.
So we made a great big aggressive game plan for the next day. Get up at 4. Start hiking. I'm sick, throwing up all morning. I'm like, oh, great. Yeah. I don't even remember the first part of the hike till it got daylight. It was foggy, and I had every hood up, and I was in misery.
2 days before, I twisted my knee.
That's right.
My left knee.
So you're boogered up.
Yeah, I'm boogered up.
We decided we're going to do 8 miles.
One way.
Yeah, one way.
Yeah.
And then the worst thing possible happens. We'll skip all the... We get into animals on the way in.
Right off the bat, man.
Elk.
Sun comes up, breaks daylight, and Josh says, bull.
Yeah. So
I got pretty good at taking that gun off my pack, man.
Slung it down. We got into position. Not the right size bull. And we're already trying to make a big move, so it's going to have to. You know, we're not shooting a dag. I'm dink over here on the way into possibly killing a really nice caliber bull.
Yeah.
They spook out of there. Our wind is blowing right down to we can't do anything about it. We really weren't expecting for elk to pop out there, and we just seen them, and they kind of bust it, but they went out the ridge, and we got to hurry up and get out to the next like washboard ridge, and we caught them again. Mm-hmm. So then we got to look over them. We found a couple bulls in that group. It was a far shot. Too far for anything like that. So we put the gun, everything back away, and hiked up. And there stands a 150-inch mule deer.
Yeah, so we've hunted 4 years.
Yeah. And we're dead always elk.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, mule deer don't, like, they're not mine.
I know. Yep. I know this now.
Yeah. I don't know. They've just never had a thing for them. You know, I like looking at them, but never had an itch for one. But in the past 4 years, man, we've never stumbled across monster mule deer. Mm-mm. They would have been like, I'm shooting that thing. You know, I mean, you took my gun from me coming out.
And you stumble on this mule deer.
Yeah.
No tag.
Yeah.
Well, not
well,
that.
Well, Josh had a tag, I guess.
Yeah. That buck was that was 140 plus, 100, probably 150, but big forks.
If I would have not shot that deer, we'd have never seen a mule deer.
Nope.
You know, that's how I shoot that mule deer, and we see mule deer everywhere.
That's actually what happened to Logan's client too. He shot that mule deer, and then, you know, the next couple of days, that's all they got into.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I mean, I'm tickled to death with it, but that other, I mean, was, we're talking like,
yeah, 27, 28 inches wide.
Yeah, yeah, monsters.
Great big forks.
Yeah.
Stands there at 60 yards with three does. We actually have to walk away from him because he's not even spooking. We walk away, and I'm like
a drug addict.
I can't even like walk away. I'm like walking backwards up the hill, staring at this thing too with binoculars. Like, oh my goodness, really? Picture perfect, beautiful snow-capped peaks in the back would have been the sickest pictures you ever. Yeah. Unbelievable, but yep. Anyway, so we go on after these, the first group of bulls that we seen on the way to the elk that we were trying to get on. And they boogered out past there. We never got on them. So we continue on our merry way. And the worst thing happens the whole entire day. I cut them bull tracks where they come up out of that canyon. And they tipped over into another one. So we just did 8 miles for bulls that are no longer in there. So what do?
Yeah.
You can't.
Move on. Yep. Keep going forward.
Keep going. So we continued on with the plan just because we could still see country in there. Get around. It's ghost town.
Tracked a little bear going in.
Yeah. Tracked a little bear going in.
Was it a grizzly?
No.
Maybe.
We were on the fence about that
one. It was a yearling bear. Its toes were very far in front of its pad. And you could create a straight line. Very good. But it was a small bear. And it was kind of distorted. Kind of. But there was a lot of if factors. So yeah. We're just, it's a bear.
Yeah. Could have been.
Could have been. So we pull up on the spot where we can glass pretty good into that sparsy timber, a few openings, and we do glass until your eyeballs are bleeding. Nothing. Not
wind.
Just wind.
Wind.
Not even any deer moving in there, and we had seen a pile of deer the day before glassing it from the other side. And so we pull back out. Well, we decide that we're going to make a decision. There's three routes out of there. You got real bad, not so bad, it could be horrible. And but the one where it's not so bad, it's going to be some side hilling and not as much opportunity to get back on animals. And it's Friday and we've been pounding it. We're trying to get an elk killed. So we decide we're going to go way back around.
Yeah, real bad.
And try to find
one last hoorah.
More elk. And we do it. We all decide, we sit down, we're like, hey, everybody's going to be in agreement. We're going to do whatever we all agree on. So we kind of...
And I trashed my heel going in. So the first 8 miles...
Yeah, a lot of steepness.
Defleshed my right heel, to say the least, so...
We went uphill for 4 hours.
And for some reason, Mikey still comes back and still requests to hunt with you every time. This sounds real fun.
Yeah, I don't get it. We were coming out of there, and I was just like, oh, my God. I do not remember coming up this hill, man.
It was steep.
Yeah.
Real steep.
I mean, we went uphill in the dark for 4 hours.
Yep. And we kept thinking, I was like, I'm selling this going back out. I was like, it's all downhill.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. The first 3.5 miles are just as steep as the first 3.5 miles from the pickup.
Yeah. We run out of that place, dude.
We did.
I really don't know how we did it.
We had to make it back around to a certain point, or all those miles would have been in vain if we couldn't have made it back around and glass that opening. So,
Josh, give me a 5-minute head start.
Yep.
I said, I'm gone.
He takes off. I'm putting my pack and everything on. We start down out of there, and I'm like, I'm jogging. Like, literally, I'm jogging down the trail. I'm, like, doing the shuffle because it's downhill and there's snow. It's kind of, you can shuffle your feet, not bend your knees, and I'm cranking down off there. I get to the bottom, I look out the trail, and I don't see Mikey. I was like, here we go. I was like, he's not going to let us catch him now. So I'm hustling. Finally get around the bend of the trail, I can see him out there. I'm like, oh, he's in sight. So so we catch him. He's like, do you see that bear track? I was like, nah. He's like, grizzly track, come right down in our boot tracks, turn, run back over the bank. I was like, dude, I never seen it, not one bit.
100 yards from where we were perched up for 4 hours.
Yeah, he come up there, smelled us, and took off. So, that was kind of cool.
I think he smelled that meatball burrito I was eating.
It was coming out of our back end. Yeah, he goes, he's got as big a foot as I do, Jackson.
Yeah.
What size foot do you have?
14.
Yes.
Yeah. Big old bear. Claws on him.
Small bear, not very.
Yeah.
And so we come back out of there. What's standing there is that dang mule deer again.
Same exact place. That, same exact that mule deer.
Piece of crap.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I have next week to hunt for myself. I probably won't even see an animal.
You have the next 2 weeks to hunt for yourself, so hopefully we'll have some stories for
we
that.
We blew our wad on that.
Yeah. Yep.
We give it a valiant effort. It didn't happen.
Yeah. 15.6 miles from truck to truck.
Yeah.
And then yesterday was a
everyone
foggy,
was back.
Rainy.
Yeah. Everyone was back in camp super early yesterday. It was quite miserable.
We went and did just an Old Faithful yesterday, and no one was there on a Saturday.
Yeah, nuts.
I couldn't believe it.
It was pouring the rain.
Not in the morning. Oh. Yeah. It was beautiful.
It was nice till lunchtime.
Yeah, so we got in there. We actually glassed, what, 3 bulls?
Mm-hmm.
Glassed 3 bulls. No play on them with the weather coming in. It was, you can't.
Yeah, as you say, they might as well have been on the moon.
Yep. They weren't even in our area code. Well, there was a bunch of elk where we needed them to be able to make moves on them, but we couldn't pick a bull out of there, and they timbered up. Everything kind of timbered up. It was weird. Timbered up about the same time. Deer, elk, everything. The wind started kicking up a little bit. About a half hour later, the rain came, and that pretty much ended the hunt.
Yep.
We bounced around a couple times trying to using the mobile ground blind just to get over to a spot, but the fog was so rolled in, so we were just checking to make sure trees weren't down across the roads.
So,
and that was that.
That was how the first week of rifle went. You're excited for this week coming?
Oh, yeah, I'm real excited. Well, I'm hunting with the same two guys I hunted with the fifth week of bear season. They were a lot of fun. They're always prepared. They got the right stuff to, you know, stick it out. And they always have a good mindset, too, and they work hard.
We'll see how that works.
That's a huge thing we need to touch on. It's like, in archery season, you could get away with hunting in blue jeans. If you were a tough SOB, you literally could get away with hunting in about anything because you can just suffer it out. In rifle season, if you don't spend the money on gear, you will not hunt all day. That's one reason why we can hunt all day. We have all very, very good gear.
Puffy?
Yep.
It's good raincoat?
Yep.
Pants.
And honestly, it takes a couple times of coming out here to figure out exactly what you need to have for your little kit. And if you're wearing non-hunting pants that aren't made for mountain hunting, you're not going to be able to hike around because you have this restriction on your legs. It's very easy. Go put your Wranglers on and try to lift your leg as high as you can, then get in your skibbies and lift your leg as high as you can. And those hunting pants, they move, and there's no restriction on them. And that helps immensely. You can't hike in Carhartt pants out here. You can't do it. It's not happening.
Yeah, no, it's just not practical. Yeah, it's not practical.
If a dude, the guy next to you has the right gear on and you don't, he'll out hunt you every day out here in rifle season because he'll just be able to go and stay longer than you can.
Yeah.
Period.
I think it's where they lose a lot of the mental fortitude too.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you're wet and cold and miserable, you could care less at that point. Yeah, what you're doing. The only thing you're thinking about is, man, when are we getting back to the truck?
The good gear dries so fast.
Yes.
So you can get soaking wet, and then you start a fire, and you're drying 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah. Merino.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, guys, I see it a ton. They'll buy themselves a nice QU jacket, a nice QU quarter zip, and they'll throw on the Vortex cotton t-shirt underneath of it. This gentleman that I'm talking to. You're going to freeze to death. That cotton shirt's going to get wet. It's not going to wick any moisture, so your whole other system is pointless. It's like wiping before you poop. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I like my analogies.
Yeah.
I come up with some good ones throughout the day.
Man, you can hunt with a few select pieces of gear and not pack around a ton of weight and hunt in anything from 10 degrees to 80 degrees.
Yeah, them self-stabilizing binocs are awesome. Game changer.
Yeah, you didn't pack a spotter all week?
No. I'm never taking a spotting scope ever again. Seriously. The one guy had a spotting scope, and I could doubt I could tell you how many points everything had with a pair of 16 power self-stabilizing binoculars. They were
at 2,000 plus yards.
Yep.
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
And I did all archery season. Now you don't glass a ton in archery season, but I made it in through the first week of rifle without changing the batteries on that thing. And it says there's 40 hours of battery life. I'm not a gizmo gadget. My dad makes fun of everybody that does that. So he's trained me not to be a gadget guy, but I'm telling you that some of this stuff is amazing. The new technology, they're worth their weight in gold.
And while we're on gear, we had a conversation with one of the client that was with Logan this week, and he didn't trust his boots. They were brand new, like mountain, not brand new. He broke them in, Mountain Extreme boots, but he was still going out around a couple things and like thinking he would slip. So he would be very careful where he was putting his feet. And then he watched Logan and he was like, I would have never put my foot there because my ankle would twist or something. So then he was like, well, I have the same boots as him. So he just started trusting his boots. He bought a good pair of boots. That's what they're for. And he said the last couple days of the week, he could just go. Because, you know, with that good ankle support, the harder soles, and they just grip. He said it made a huge difference just to, like, be able to trust the gear that you buy. And they got into some elk, too. They were actually chasing the same bull that you guys saw. Well, one of the same bulls you guys saw.
I couldn't talk Mikey into shooting that one. I tried hard.
Yeah, it was just a very unique bull, and all you guys had to say was, we saw a once-in-a-lifetime, unique-looking bull.
Bull of a lifetime.
And he was like, did you see this? And explained it to a T. And Logan just smiled and was like, well, I was hunting that one, too.
So you got yourself a pair of mountain boots this year.
Yeah, yeah. It's ironic. I looked at them at Sportsman's Warehouse for, like, the last 2 years, and apparently I'm the only one that wears, like, a size 14 boot. So, I swear these boots have been on the shelf for 2 years, and my wife threatened my life if I didn't buy them because I look at them every time we go in there. So it's the only reason I have them.
What did you come out before with?
I've always been a elk tracker guy. Yep. Back home, you know, Irish setters.
Yep. What Irish setters, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So but, did it make a huge difference?
Oh, yeah. 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 Just the side hilling and, you know, dig your toes in, dig your heels in, dig your soles in. You know, it was different, but.
Mikey grew up in very rugged country also, big 5,000-foot mountains. So he knows where to put his feet. Hiking in the mountains, I think us as guides take it for granted just because even people that hunt this type of country a lot, you learn where to put your foot because you eat the dirt a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we take score every time someone falls. That's a 1, 2, you know what I mean? So it's kind of fun. So you learn where to put your feet and where not to, and we take that for granted, I think, with the clients. Some of them that come out, vegetation, they don't know what not to step on.
Yeah.
Things like that. So that's just a learning curve. Mountain hunting is a learning curve, and it's not an easy thing to accomplish. And it's more or less, you don't come out to kill something. Mountain hunting, you come out to experience the mountains and to go where no one else goes before and kind of get that feeling in your soul. You know what I mean? That's what it's essentially about.
It's a better addiction than anything else.
Difference.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
Yeah. I was impressed with how many elk we found out there. There was elk everywhere.
Yep.
It was nice. I did not have a good archery season. I struggled getting on elk and getting elk killed. We found elk almost every day. If it was a good day, we found elk that we could see visibly and things like that. So that was exciting.
Well, we'll be back next week to update you on probably how Cody's hunt goes with a repeat client, because that's always good to touch on. And then Josh is hunting for himself for a full week.
Yeah, right. I have Wade. You think Wade's going to let me shoot anything?
Well, fine. You're hunting with Wade for the first time and since we took this over for a whole week.
I am excited for that. So, I'm going to go hunt with my boy.
There should be a couple booner muleys.
I don't know. Wade was pretty... He was real reluctant to shoot that. I mean, he threw up and he had the safety off on it. And I was like, it's small, it's small.
But then you guys were trying to go back.
Well, we got so cold that we talked each other into going back after it.
Yeah, that's the problem with Wade. We'll hunt 2 days really hard, and then he'll decide that he wants to go duck hunting, and he's going to murder some poor little innocent deer.
Oh, yeah. It's always, I won't shoot it till it's 180 plus, and then as the days go on, it just gets tinier. And yeah. The goal is tinier.
2 years ago, he passed on a 130, 140 buck the first day of hunting, and then shot a dink. I mean, it looked like a Sika deer. I don't even never yeah. even seen a mule deer look like that. It had an injury. It was blind in one eye. It's the only yeah. way he got it killed.
He said he shot it so that the genetics didn't, it didn't pass on its genetics. So it should be a fun week, and it should be a good podcast.
All right. Peace and love. Squeezing all the blood out.